animals less healthy than you can't nourish you.
Are you surviving or are you thriving?
Are you too busy to live?
Do you have grain brain?
Fat was brain.
Fight for your life. Get your prescription for health today.
Is Mother Nature too good to be
true?
It's
not you, it's the food. It's a no-grainer.
Oh, that isn't happening to us.
It's already happening to you, woman. Join our army of Minas.
Keep the government off our farms.
Make it happen today.
Save the bacon.
Save the bacon. It's time to drop some atomic mom bombs.
It's not me. It's you. Invest in your life.
Yay! Her name is Neethi. Go save the bacon, mommy.
Hey, friends. It's Neethi the pharmacist. And today I am here with Miss Tammy Perdue of Sweet Peas Urban Garden. She's the owner of this urban garden right here in downtown Raleigh. So welcome to the show.
Thank you, Neethi. We're really excited to be helping with this today.
Why don't you give us a little bit of background as to why you chose to do this style of urban gardening?
Okay. So I live in an old neighborhood in downtown Raleigh that has about an acre plot, and we had always done a little gardening on it. And I loved the idea, and I wanted to do more. So I heard about a weekend workshop about urban farming being sponsored by an urban farm guru coming to Raleigh. So I signed up and went and took the whole weekend classes. And one of the things that I learned was I could do a better job with my compost. I could do a better job as a steward of my property, of my land, to get denser food. And I could also do a lot of diverse things in a downtown 1 acre plot. So I was particularly enamored of the microgreen class that weekend. And I took a shot at growing microgreens on my front porch and in my sunroom while I was also doing all of the composting efforts that Will Allen had instructed us on how to do, and I started growing some mushrooms. So that's
mushrooms.
What led me.
Mm-hmm. They're super powerful. Those are superfoods.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
They really are.
So you said dense food.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I tell everybody about the microgreens is that they're so nutrient dense that 1 tablespoon is equivalent to an entire serving of vegetables in nutrition.
For sure.
And then I get yelled at. And people are like, no, that doesn't even make any sense. Like, what are you saying? How can I eat 1 tablespoon of this and that's the same as eating an entire serving of vegetables?
So, as I was starting this business and doing some research, I found that there's this fabulous researcher at the University of Maryland who was very interested in particularly microgreens, but nutrient labeling on all vegetables for the FDA. And so she got a grant and she started growing 25 different microgreens that are available on the market, readily available. And she compared them with the past research done on the full-grown vegetable. And that's where her first iteration came out, and it proved that any of the 25 were at least 4 times as nutrient dense as their full-grown version, and some of them were 40 times, cilantro and radish, of all things.
Mm-hmm.
So this
super
woman...
Super chelating foods.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So that's where we get that information. At the minimum, they're 4 times more nutrient dense. So you're getting in a tablespoon, just take that mass and turn it into 4 times that quantity, and you've got a full serving of a vegetable. So it's easy to translate that mm-hmm. 1 tablespoon of microgreen. The other scientific thing about that research, the thing that I just find fascinating, and I even read something today, the seed, nature's seed, is absolutely the most ingenious thing. So a tiny little seed has everything to grow that plant out. But in the first pop that the plant makes and after germinating in the cotyledon stage, it totally is self-supporting. So all those nutrients that are going to grow into that great big plant are living there in that without any help from us, from soil, from anything but just some water.
So no medium, folks.
That's right. For microgreens.
For the listeners, they need to understand that means that it does, the medium at that moment is irrelevant. So we're not adulterating this life, this life-giving force with any soil that we could wonder, is it clean enough? It's not getting force from the soil. This is just exclusive of that.
That's right. The seed. The marvelous sacred seed. So, and another research that I found was going on at the University of Michigan was somebody who was a regular, he was a scientist, but he was also a regular farmer's market patron. And he was getting basil in December and January in Michigan. And it occurred to him, it was delightfully tasty and he loved it. But it occurred to him, could it possibly be as nutrient dense as the basil that he got in the summer that he knew was grown in soil? This probably was grown in a greenhouse or probably grown in water. And his research, he expected to find that it was not as nutrient dense. What he did find was that the forces against the plant were creating an environment, stressing the plant so that it was producing more antioxidants. So it was actually a bit more nutrient dense then. So that's when, that's why I'm so pleased that we do it in our container. We're doing an, a lot of food in a dense space, and we're not doing anything to hurt anybody's nutrition. We're increasing.
Right. But those plants, just like all life, they're being stressed a little enough so that, you know, just like when you stress your muscles, if you don't use your muscles, they're never going to do anything. They'll atrophy. And, but so in that way, that small amount of stress allows them to fight for their life.
That's right.
In a bigger way. That's right. And so that makes the food give us more life-giving force. I'm always telling everyone that we need to eat more life-giving force. And it doesn't require a lot of life-giving force. If you eat food that has like actual life-giving force, what people call nutrient dense, then you don't need a great volume of that food.
For sure. You feel satiated really quickly when you're at, I mean, we, in my family, we add microgreens to everything. We snack on them during the day. I love having a sunflower shoot just, you know, pop it in my mouth. We use peas on everything. I put a little bit of brassica mix on my eggs or breakfast. There is no meal that doesn't go by that we don't use. There's a place, there's a microgreen perfect for everything. So I know we're getting, you know, 20 times our our vegetable servings a day.
And you can see it in your health. I think that's what people also need to experience, the, you know, like their hair and nails and skin, the difference that they experience with that. I mean, I know that it, my kids, if they come to your place, they're just eating that all the time. Or if we come to market with you, then forget it. Like, you probably have to lock and key that stuff. I'm always embarrassed. Like, oh my God, please stop eating. Because people say that children wouldn't eat green things. And it's a complete lie. I haven't met a child yet. You know, we've taken the microgreens, as you know, to our children's school as, like, you know, with our kids' projects that they do. Somehow we always incorporate food in all of their projects.
Perfect.
And when they take those microgreens with them, I mean, we run out of those faster than I've ever would have run out of even Hershey Kisses or something.
I hear so many stories at market, and I witness, and also we supply a daycare in Southeast Raleigh with microgreens for those children, about children teaching their parents about what's really, really delicious and how they can easily incorporate it into their routines.
Well, I think that parents are not realizing that they are the ones who are instilling these bad habits into the children. I mean, I know I got to be really careful. You know, I'm a human being just like everybody else, you know, and I had, or I still have these bad habits that I have to be very conscious of. So for me, I just kind of tame that by not having it in the house, for example. Mm-hmm. But if I do have it in the house, I notice the children enjoy it, mm-hmm. want it, mm-hmm. but they're not going to go looking for it mm-hmm. versus me, who grew up on some of that stuff mm-hmm. and feels it necessary to go do that. Mm-hmm. And I've worked really, really hard with my husband, and we really try not to make our children feel that anything that's happening in our lives is associated with a specific dessert or food mm-hmm. or anything that could work against us, because food is medicine and it's poison, beautiful. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
But I think that mm-hmm. a lot of parents, when they say my child won't eat that, I'm like, you already made a decision mm-hmm. for them. Mm-hmm. That's just kind of child abuse, that you mm-hmm. didn't even give them the opportunity to like something.
Yep.
Let them decide if they're not going to like it or what have you.
I see it all the time. I've seen moms tell me that they prefer everything sweet. Well, we all do, because we're programmed to, but we don't need to eat everything sweet. And let's try something not sweet.
Well, I've been deprogrammed from that. And honestly, sweet stuff makes me nauseous and it makes me literally gag mm-hmm. the way that when I talk about fat to other people, they gag. You know, like they're like, you eat like a teaspoon of coconut oil medicinally. Mm-hmm. That's disgusting. And I'm like, you eat, you know, a wheat cookie. Makes me nauseous.
It's been in a bag for a long time, and God only knows what happened to it. Yep.
Well, okay, so you have a lot of knowledge and a lot of experience with, you know, clean food. I wanted to focus in this podcast with you about food standards, because I know that you guys are having to meet a lot of these standards, and I would like for the people out there to understand some of the standards in great detail. And as a farmer, what does that mean to you? How is that creating obstacles or giving you experiences? We want to hear that. Okay. Also, we want to redefine some of these terms for the standards, as you and I both know are for that. And even with food integrity, mm-hmm. I don't think we agree with the way the media has defined the term.
Truly.
And regarding food integrity, you know, like what you're doing is as good as anyone out there would do for themselves, and probably better. And I would like to know why.
Okay.
And then of course, you and I talk all the time about the human rights violations mm-hmm. with clean food or with food, just mm-hmm. generally speaking. And I want us to talk specifically about local food versus clean food versus the perception of all of that. And then there's grocery store, mm-hmm. public food mm-hmm. system. Mm-hmm. And then finally, the power of consumer choice mm-hmm. and how to fight. What do you call it? The institutional, what were you saying?
Institutional food. Just institutional food.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yep.
Okay. So let's begin with food integrity. I hear a lot of people, you know, I mean, I think it's a typical mindset of most conservative or like, I don't know, we're all pretty frugal. Mm-hmm. You know, we have to be mm-hmm. with our money. So people are like, well, I'm not going to pay anybody to do mm-hmm. something I can do, but they'll go to the grocery store and buy the most affordable thing. Like I've seen people say to me, well, organic at Whole Foods versus Harris Teeter versus Food Lion, for example, mm-hmm. but all of that food is the same. If it's certified organic, it doesn't matter mm-hmm. if you're going to buy it at BJ's or Sam's or Food Lion or Harris Teeter or Whole Foods. It doesn't matter. Irrelevant. But it is a big difference between that and getting it from the farmer, but not just because it's local.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm. So it seems to me, having done this now for about 3 years, that the organic organization, which is actually a division of the USDA, been around since the 50s, is just another branch of institutional food. So when you go in a grocery store and you see the organic symbol, it's still it's been through some interesting paths. It's gone on rides, probably all the way from California. It's been gassed in a truck. I mean, there are things that you can do organically that, you know, you just when you think about it yourself and you're thinking about putting that food in your mouth, I don't want that in my food. So that's the issue that we have with the national organic standard.
So poison is poison. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Even if it's organic poison.
That's right. That's right. So they are not happy with our growing as well. They're feeling like they're being threatened because people all over this country are trying to come up with innovative ways to grow more food because we're going to have a crisis of not having enough food to feed the planet as the population grows. So
as per media hype.
As per scientific research, I mean, 2050 is when the population is on a curve upward, and what we're going to really need to be able to feed that. It is true that number of how we're going to feed people is based on the population growth, but it's also based on what the available land is in this country to do conventional farming.
Conventional. Mm-hmm. So let's just mm-hmm. get back to this okay. for one moment. I want to make sure we're making this point clear.
Okay.
Because I know that you and I are on the same page with these things, but when people hear it in the way that you just said, then they're saying, see, she's saying that there's scientific proof that we don't have enough food in Ethiopia, and you keep telling us that's a lie. What I mean is industrialized agriculture,
yes,
which is not real.
And so do I. Mm-hmm.
It is machinery. Mm-hmm. It is industrializing life. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it is trying to make the living function and operate as robots, for mm-hmm. example. Mm-hmm. And life does not work in that way. Mm-hmm. And so what you've learned about nutrient density and the highest and best use of your small piece of land downtown Raleigh. If I was to make you eat every single thing that you grow in your pod, mm-hmm. and I said, Tammy, you're going to have to eat all that.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't do it.
I mean, so what the listeners mm-hmm. don't understand is that the problem is not producing the amount of food that we would need to feed the growing population.
True.
Nature will always have enough bounty. Mm-hmm. Please never, ever. I feel like right now the media has skewed this so much that the eaters, our listeners, and our listeners may be more educated, but I just mean the general population that's being educated by our government. We can feed the world. Our farmers can feed the world correctly because that is sustainable. Mm-hmm. What is unsustainable is industrialized agriculture that they want you to believe as eaters. This is the lie, everyone, that is, you know, we're going to have a food problem, and they're trying to fearmonger everyone into believing they need to take these fake supplements, the fake bone broth, the green powders. What can you tell me about that?
The green powders. Yeah, it really is astounding to me that people can't understand that if you take a living thing and you kill it and you dry it and you transport it across the globe and you then try to reconstitute it, that it's not going to be the same as picking it live and fresh.
Can you talk about enzymatically alive food, please?
Okay. So,
how about good soil bacteria? How about you don't use soil? What's your good bacteria? What about that?
So again, everything that we grow is getting its nutrients from the miraculous seed. So, we're not having to.
Does that include some good bacteria?
It does. Of course it does. Of course, you would not believe the health profile of a ounce shot of juiced wheatgrass, fresh, 9 days old, cut and juiced. It's just remarkable. So I always get concerned when I see that there's these powders in these.
So does yours have probiotics in it then?
Yes, of course.
It's alive, you mean?
Yes.
So I don't have to buy a probiotic?
That's right. Exactly right.
Are you guys hearing this, listeners? I want you to know that everything that I eat, has probiotics in it. I don't need to take a probiotic. It all has it because our microgreens are alive. Our green juice is alive. Our whatever we're doing is alive, and it has bacteria, the good gut healing bacteria. Our friend bacteria is not a germ. It's a bacteria. Mm-hmm. That's our friend. Mm-hmm. Life giving force.
Yep.
Okay. Yep. So back to your thing about feeding the world.
Yep. Okay. So National Organic Standards Board doesn't want to include us because we are growing bioponically, which is a whole nother issue. But anyway, so the certifications that that are required. So that's a certification that is required of some of the bigger institutions that could possibly distribute our food.
Organic certification.
That's okay. Right. So are we, as a local grower, it's very difficult. And we are so thankful to people like Neethi to find a distributor of our life giving product. We don't have the capability to go out and tell the world about how important this is, as we're also growing it, packaging it, and trying to get it out.
What?
So it's really,
are you just lazy?
It's really a challenge, and so we reached out to some of our local bigger distributors, and they require a lot of these certifications that have been institutionalized and were developed because of institutional food.
Because the consumer is uneducated.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Because the consumer wants that for their local people. And this is my problem. This is why I'm constantly screaming at folks. I will not require any of my producers for my CSA to be certified because you can look them in the eye. Are you guys hearing this? I know that there are farmers on the ready.
There are.
Everywhere.
There are.
Mm-hmm. And they are waiting to rise to the occasion. Mm-hmm. Like Joel Salatin talks about, you know, if the consumer choice and consumer power is greater than institutional food. Mm-hmm. But the problem today is that no one is willing to be inconvenienced enough to do that. But then they want you to give them a pill to fight cancer or a pill to make them all better. And you know, while we're redefining these terms, then, you know, you're talking about food standards because that is supposed to establish food integrity. That supposedly you can't do yourself.
Truly.
When someone's standing in front of you at a market. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've been with you at a farmer's market, mm-hmm. and you're not allowed to talk about it. Can you just get into that for one moment, please?
Sure. So we are not allowed to use terms like detoxing or alkalizing or cardioprotective or cancer killers in general.
At a farmer's market.
That's right. That's right.
You're not allowed to educate mm-hmm. someone in front of you.
It makes a lot of folks uncomfortable when I start talking in that direction. And there's farmers markets where it's in their bylaws that we can't do this.
Can you say that a little bit louder?
Oh, yes. So there are many, many farmers markets where the bylaws of the farmers markets don't want you to discuss with your clients about anything that you're calling a cancer-killing product or an alkalizing or a detoxing.
Or what about your farming practices?
Yeah, so they're okay with us discussing how we grow. I haven't had anybody tell me I can't talk about that. But they also, more and more, are requiring that we be certified in these industrial food certifications. So GAP is becoming ubiquitous. Everybody's going to make
Please
me
define
GAP certified.
That. GAP yeah. certification in your case is not the GAP diet, folks. Don't be confused. GAP certification does not mean that it's approved for the GAP diet. That's a confusion.
So GAP stands for Good Agricultural Practices, and the certification is actually dual. It's Good Handling Practices as well. And you get inspected by a contract employee of the USDA through your state, who comes and tests you for food safety factors, a whole list of criteria about whether you're practicing at the level that they feel is food safe and can be represented in these larger institutions as trustworthy. So Neithi and I were talking about this yesterday, and it is kind of funny, and my employees find it funny, that we have to have a ban against having glass near the processing station or near the growing area.
And you're talking about light bulbs, folks. Yes, this is light bulbs, not like a glass you're drinking.
That's right. The light bulbs have to be protected with plastic covers because in the history of food production, somebody had glass and sold it in a package and didn't stop and go, oh my goodness, are we going to kill somebody if we put glass?
Oh, because the light bulb exploded or broke or
they
something.
They hit that light bulb. The light bulb did something. Yeah. So my staff finds that just hysterical. Like, who would ever do that?
And then we were talking about it, and I said, would you not, even if you had to throw away all the microgreens in the pod, you know, just do that to ensure that no one would accidentally get glass
That's true.
In their package?
Just to be decent, but also for Pete's sake, I don't want to be sued either with causing somebody to swallow glass.
It's again insane. It's human decency that is lost in the mechanicalized, industrialized food system, which is not what we're interested in supporting, which is the public cheap food system. Going along that food standard road, I mean, I know it costs you to be certified.
Oh, yes. Each and every one of them are usually roughly around $1,000 for a small farm like me. You know, it's the time of the auditor, and it's...
You mean your time is worth something?
Yeah. One day, maybe. So anyway, it's onerous to start getting four or five... certifications that are required of the big food distributors.
Would you rather do that for however many hours that requires with the paperwork, with the money that you have to pay them to be there? Or would you sooner let people come from my website or anywhere, even your own website, and call you and say, hey, can I come tour your place because I want to buy food from you? Because this is what I used to do. Like when Mina was in the hospital and we needed clean food, I mean, when I was looking for farms, then I wouldn't buy anything from any farm until I went to their farm. Mm-hmm. So just because they came to the farmer's market didn't mean like anything to me because I had become so distrustful with whatever was causing this cancer that I couldn't figure out. If a farmer wouldn't allow me to come to their farm, I just wouldn't eat it. So we stop cold going to the grocery store. We stop participating in the public food system altogether. And if I couldn't find it somewhere, we didn't eat it. So
I am so pleased when somebody asks me if they can come see what we're up to and buy food out of the refrigerator that we store it in. I'm so pleased. And more people are doing it. I have to say that. I'm thrilled about that. But yes, to answer your first question, I would so much rather be supporting my community, my local community, knowing that I am growing the microgreens, the nutrient dense thing, right there in their neighborhood.
In Raleigh, downtown. And you would rather make time to tour them than to do anything else. And would you be offended if someone said to you at a farmer's market, I'm not going to buy this from you unless you let me come check your farm out first?
No, not at all. I'd love it. I'd invite them to come. I have.
A lot of people feel like they're going to offend a farmer if they ask questions.
I love it when people ask us questions. We are unusual, first of all, so you almost have to ask me what I'm doing. But I just love that engagement. I love it.
So I've been at markets with you where people have literally tried to see us through their microscopic eye or something from across the way. And they literally look like they're afraid to walk up. And they don't know what you're doing there.
Yeah.
And they don't understand what you have because it's small. So they're like, what is that? What do they have over there? But they won't like come over there.
Yep. I've seen that too. We try to do everything, give them samples and encourage them to with some signage about how healthy microgreens are. And just try to be as pleasant so that we don't scare them. But
hey guys, don't be afraid to go up to anybody and ask them, what are they selling? Let them have an opportunity to give you their infomercial. ask them all the questions. And, you know, I had many, many farmers who were growing conventionally very proudly tell me all the chemicals that they spray all over their food. I mean, you know, which is fine. They're being honest. I'm not knocking them. I love the honesty because that is the transparency everyone is seeking with these food standard labels. All anybody ever wants is for you to tell them the truth.
True.
You know, I mean, if this guy's charging, you know, this much, like, you know, whatever, $5 for eggs and that guy's charging $2 for eggs, I want to know what the difference is. And I don't know why these guys can't tell me the difference. But at a farmer's market, they pretty much can't say mine are better than his because whatever.
That's right.
Whatever reason. And that farmer knows what he's doing that's different. So as a consumer, consumers are frustrated. I was frustrated. I'm like, what's so great about it? So then they just go home going, that guy's crazy. I'm not paying him $5 for those eggs. And they don't want to buy them. When actually the truth is, if I go to market with you, I mean, I've almost gotten you kicked out of a farmer's market. Poor Tammy will get an email from the person who's running the market. Who is that person? And all I'm doing is raving about your farming practices. I'm not even bashing anyone else.
That's right. It's true. It's true. We got to solve this problem. I'm working as hard as I can with Neithi to educate and get people comfortable with how easy. I just like people to think of the big picture. Why would a strawberry package that got picked in California, drove in a truck all the way across the country and came to your plate is cheaper than, you know, anything else that you can buy right now? I mean, in January, why does this happen? How can this make sense?
This human rights moment, this is what, so I want to hit this before we close.
Okay.
I know, I mean, I want you to say to me what you said yesterday about the human rights perspective on this exact scenario. First of all, I don't know how many people have gone to the store and bought strawberries or gotten them from a you-pick farm and brought them home. I mean, I have picked them at an organic farm, brought them home, and they're fragile, folks. I mean, I need to process those strawberries instantly. If I wait till the next day, the ones at the bottom are going to be dead. Or, you know, they're alive, and so they are going to, the pressure is just too much in the bucket or you know. So how in the world can they put them in these plastic containers and ship them anywhere? I mean, and again, I don't know how many of you have ever taken food on a plane. I, you know, as a mother, I, when my children were infants and we flew somewhere, have had a banana in my diaper bag. I can't know who else has had this experience, but I had a perfectly good banana, probably a little too green for my taste. But that was what was available. That was what I got from the airport that I carried with me in case my child was hungry or something. And by the time I got to my destination, and, you know, you're looking for something in the diaper bag and my hand is like touching some slime. It is the banana that has gone from being too green to literally black. And now it's leaking fluid from the experience, just from the time that it took from the one airport, getting in the plane, taking off and landing somewhere else. That is what that stress did to that banana. I mean, I can't know how flying is, like how that's affecting us on a cellular level, if it's doing that to a banana. But if that banana is coming from Ecuador or wherever in the world it came from, or the strawberries, guys, how is it alive? I don't even know, because I can't even put it in the car and get it home. What do you think?
When it's fresh.
And I want you to talk about that human rights thing. Don't forget that part.
Okay, so that's the part that really, really astounds me, or really just makes me crazy. And it's so institutionalized, we don't think about it. But back to the strawberries. How could you possibly pay that much for a human being to go out and pick it, put it in the container, get it into a refrigerator, or get it cleaned and put in a refrigerator and package.
Okay, and bleach water.
And, yes. And then get it on a truck and drive the truck across the country for $1.99. How's that possible? The person
who picked it. Oh, there's volume, Tammy. This is the misconception, is that there's volume, because, you know, everybody else is a business expert and we're obviously super foolish. So the business people have said to me, you know, Indian woman, it's volume. And if you guys did enough volume, then you could, you know. And I'm like, a strawberry farm can't produce but however much a strawberry farm can produce. Mm-hmm. And I don't care. I don't know if people have priced labor out recently. Mm-hmm. I mean, what?
There's no way this works with paying people a decent wage. There's no way. There's no way.
So are they enslaved?
I did hear somebody the other day tell me that, you know, migrant workers don't have to be paid. They don't have to be paid minimum wage. And
do you have some scientific proof to back that up?
I have. I think I heard a NPR study on a revolt in New York State.
Wow.
Of farm workers, because they are so underprotected. They don't have the same employee rights as other types of employees in this country.
I mean, let's be clear. The legal migrant workers on farms, even the regular farm workers that are U.S. citizens that may not be migrants, which everyone in America is an immigrant.
We're all humans.
Yeah, let's just get that out of the way. Mm-hmm. But whoever they are, they're not even paid minimum wage. And if they were getting $7.25 or $7.45 an hour? An hour. Mm-hmm. How many strawberries can you pick in an hour?
I know.
Even if you are like Speedy Gonzalez, mm-hmm. okay, how many can you pick? Is it a bucket? Is it five? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I'm sorry, but volume just went out the door. Mm-hmm. There isn't a machine that can pick strawberries mm-hmm. out of the field without obliterating mm-hmm. them.
That's right.
I mean, we haven't invented that yet. I know that you guys believe that, mm-hmm. just like people actually believe that we're in space because they've been watching movies, you know? Mm-hmm. So, and they also believe that healthcare is so advanced because the media has hyped it up so much that we're immortal practically. Did you know that?
That's why we look so much better now than we did 40 years ago before the industrial food system took out. That's why all of us walking on the street look so healthy.
I mean, let's mm-hmm. just look, watch the Brady Bunch folks mm-hmm. and just get a refresher mm-hmm. on what we're supposed to look like. Mm-hmm. You know, and that mm-hmm. wasn't even just because, oh, they were only using pencil stars mm-hmm. at that time.
No,
I grew up after the Brady Bunch and I know that we did not even look like what these kids today look like. Mm-hmm. We looked more like the mm-hmm. Brady Bunch.
Mm-hmm. Yep. For sure. For sure. For sure.
So $2.75 for a quart of strawberries. How much are the good ones? The real ones?
Gosh. I mean, if you're paying somebody a fair wage, it's got to be at least three times that.
Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. At least. Mm-hmm. But let's also know that organic allows sprays.
Yes, for sure. Oh, and
the,
for sure.
And the berries would definitely never make it. Mm-hmm. So even mm-hmm. your organic strawberries mm-hmm. are sprayed mm-hmm. with something.
For sure.
And then you know what your standards are for the microgreens. Mm-hmm. I mean, isn't there this bacteria issue with the microgreens?
So lots of people come in the crop box, especially growers, farmers, and they always ask us, what are we adding? What pesticides are we using and what herbicides are we using and what fertilizer? We use nothing but RO water because, again,
that's reverse osmosis mm-hmm. water, mm-hmm. folks.
Which just takes out chemicals that the city decided that we needed in our water system. It's just plain water and organic burlap and cotton burlap. That's
because
it.
Because the seeds don't need a medium, really.
That's right.
It's just something to kind of hold it together on
that's
the
right.
tray.
That's exactly right.
Well, you and I can talk about this forever. we'll never be done with this conversation.
True.
But this is the beginning. Mm-hmm. And I hope to have you on the air with me again where we can.
Happy to.
You know, like elaborate mm-hmm. As you're facing more and more obstacles. Mm-hmm. And so just in closing, what are your certifications?
Okay.
And just talk about where you're at.
So we found that there was an organization in farmers in New York State who banded together to try to rebut the National Organic Standards Board's their entire movement. They feel like it's gotten way off track. And so they're called Certified Naturally Grown. Mm-hmm. And it's a peer-to-peer certification. So a farmer from or a client can look at our look at the documents and the information that the organization feels is important for consumers to know about us. And we are certified naturally grown. And then we are Friday became GAP certified in North Carolina. We're the only container certified GAP. Mm. And we are trying to figure out the National Organic Standards Board standard because we have a couple of large distributors, food distributors, interested in us, and they require it. So that'll be our next step, and I will keep you posted on how difficult it is for us and how some of it's a little crazy.
So let's say that you get organic certified or whatever, mm-hmm. then are you going to have to bleach your produce?
No. No. And for us, they're just interested in the inputs. Mm-hmm. Not the processing. So the processing comes through GAP. Mm-hmm. And so we're solid there. We can process and we're not required to soak the microgreens in anything.
Okay.
Which would kill them.
Yeah, because they're very fragile. Yeah, they're very fragile. Mm-hmm. And so the best, highest and best way to get them from you would be directly.
That's right.
Or...
We're at three farmers markets currently, getting ready to start Holly Springs in April. But we're at the Wake Forest Farmers Market. We're at the Rebus Boylan Heights Saturday Market. And we're at the Whole Foods in Cary Saturday Market.
Yes, and right in front of the Cary Whole Foods.
That's right.
And also in Farm to Fork Meat.
For sure.
And also...
We're in about 25 restaurants,
yes.
So you can enjoy them at some of our some Raleigh's really cutting edge food awareness restaurants,
like Fresh Levant,
mm-hmm. Living Kitchen,
mm-hmm.
Fiction Kitchen. So we're in all of the interesting new restaurants in downtown Raleigh, and the Produce Box.
Okay, and. How do you use microgreens? I tell everybody that when you talked about it, mm-hmm. people are blending them. Mm-hmm. People are juicing them. Mm-hmm. I personally can take a 2 ounce container and just put it in a pound of meat at the end, like right before I serve it. So for example, if I'm having tacos, then I'll brown the ground beef or saute our fish or whatever. And then just as I'm putting the pan on the table, I will fold in 2 ounces of microgreens, mm-hmm. and then we will put that nutrition in our salad or whatever, however we're going to eat that. So there are no rules, right? Mm-hmm. Just grab them and eat them. If you ask the kids, they'll show you.
Mm-hmm.
Your children can always show you how to eat these things.
For sure.
They don't need to, you don't need to wash them. You don't need to do anything to them, right?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Okay.
Totally.
Just
mm-hmm.
put your hands in and dig in. And
dig in. Enjoy.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you for being brave and coming and speaking out and educating people and nourishing our community and making all the sacrifices that you make to do that.
And we couldn't do it without you.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Amy.
An honest review about the show on iTunes and like and share our Facebook page. You can also sign up for our newsletter. And if you like the education that we're bringing to you each week, can you please help support our 501c3 mission to reestablish the regenerative organic small family farm food system by making it happen today with a tax-deductible cash donation? You can register and make a donation at www.farmtoforkmeatriot.org. Again, that's www.farmtoforkmeatriot.org. And click on the donate button. I'm Neethi, signing off. Remember, let your farmer fill your prescription. Reboot
restore, and rejoice.